Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I am your other host, Benjamin R. Harrison.
Ben, I think we've begun keeping track of these things, and in the contest of being recognized and seen and greeted out into the wild, I believe I'm now up 2-0 after today. Because I was seen, Ben. I was seen, recognized, approached, handshook, and chatted with for a while from our friend Jimmy in Seattle.
The people of the Pacific Northwest clearly have something against me because I go there frequently and nobody ever says hi to me.
You know what? What it takes in Seattle, you've heard of the Seattle chill, right? The Seattle chill is a term of affection for what it's like socially in Seattle, which is you'll walk by people on the sidewalk and they won't regard your existence. you're basically ignored here. It's a city full of Tyrannosauruses.
I think that's what appeals to me so much about it, is that's kind of my default mode.
And what it takes to rise to like basic human decency level of socialization is having a hit podcast, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it takes.
Smashed
it. I feel normal socially because I have this stupid podcast. That's what it takes.
Well, that's just good hard science, Adam.
Kind Jimmy came up to me. This wasn't an easy thing for him. I was with some friends, enjoying some beers, watching some footballs.
Yeah, Jimmy rolls up and suds.
Yeah, he rolls up and he like sort of like in a real sotto voce kind of way was like, "Hey, just wanted to let you know, really love your show. Really think you and Ben are doing great." Like, he did it out of earshot of my friends, and my friends are at the same table as me.
That's great.
Yeah. So he was really cool about it, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm here with my wife. She gave me a t-shirt for Christmas as a gift."
Wow.
And I was like, "Jimmy, would have been far more embarrassing had you been wearing that shirt to this to this encounter. I'm really glad you're not."
Can't wear that to a sports bar.
Got a good chuckle out of that. Yeah. Yeah, you get kicked out of a sports bar for wearing that.
We don't serve your kind here.
Yeah. Real good dude. Real nice hang. He went on his way with his great wife. Great gift-giving wife. And that was it. So now, in the span of a couple months, I've had two really great interactions with viewers. I recommend it, Ben. That's what I'm trying to say. And it's 2-0, so you need to get on the scoreboard.
I have had chats with viewers, but always at, like, official Max Fun-related things.
That's what I'm saying. It's different when you're just out in the wild, not associated.
Yeah. I've also had the thing at Max Fun-related things where I'm there and my wife is there and I'm talking to somebody and she's like, "Did you know he has a show?"
So far, this has happened in front of really close friends of mine, where it's felt great when the individual leaves and I turn back around and they're like, "Oh God." they're like Tasha Yaring me, the "I can't believe this."
I believe this.
It has not happened with my wife around, though I can't wait for that to happen. That should count as 2 points.
Yeah. That's I don't know if your wife's optic nerves can handle the strain that her eyeballs will put on them.
It's a tremendous amount of torque when those things turn back around.
Yeah.
In that circumstance.
Oh my God, that's like how many Newton feet of torque are we talking about? I mean, like
she could pull a Jeep out of a ditch with the amount of torque that she's got on those eye rolls.
She could pull a Jeep down a rainy hill while a Dilophosaurus is running around.
"What do you want? What do you want? You want food? Look at me. I just fell down a hill. I'm soaking wet. I don't have any food."
Indeed. Well, I was happy for that little moment of joy today in an otherwise ho-hum weekend. And thanks for chatting me up, Jimmy. That was super fun.
What a cool story. Well, do you want to get to the reason we came here, Adam?
Yeah, we're not here to just socialize about our many viewers, our many kind viewer interactions. We're here to talk about season 5, episode 5, Disaster. This episode starts with like some downtime, right? The ship appears to be just sort of putting through space, killing time in between missions.
They are taking their leisure.
Yeah, and we get a scene in 10 forward where a group has gathered around Miles and Keiko, specifically around Keiko's growing belly.
Yeah, she went from zero to pregnant, man.
I feel like Riker is super pumped to touch her belly because he just recently has also had a little bun in the oven, in his own personal oven.
Yeah.
A couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
When he was pregnant with an ankylosaur.
Yeah. He's like, do you think it'll have rave paint on it or?
He understands pregnancy in a way that no one else in this group can who are dudes.
Yeah. And true to form, Miles and Keiko are bickering.
Yeah.
If it's a boy, Michael, after my father.
Wait a minute. We decided on Hero after my father.
We talked about this last night.
That's right, and we decided on Hero.
This poor kid.
Seriously.
It's not going to be great.
Yeah. Going to be born into a divorce, I feel like.
Yeah.
At this point, I just wish it were over.
Yeah, and, I mean, everyone's sort of having a good time. It's a real uplifting sort of beginning to the story, which sort of feels like the roller coaster clacking its way to the top of the big fall,
yeah.
Right?
Riker is having the green punch of imminent doom.
There are glass tables, like more glass tables than you remember in 10 forward at this point. Like,
yeah.
They've got the middle part of the glass tables opened up, like to make it extra long. The leaves are installed.
Oh, yeah, they
the
put
glass
the
leaves
in for the Thanksgiving crowd to come through.
Yeah, it's just a ton of glass.
The doctor and Geordi are down in a cargo bay, and the doctor is trying to goad Geordi into doing a few lines from a musical that she's excited to put on.
Is her real deal like she's trying to twist his arm into some sort of performance thing she has going, but do you think that she believes that being a song and dance man will do better with the ladies? Do you think that's her true play here?
Oh, she's gonna throw Geordi a bone without him even realizing it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, make him a song and dance man.
Yeah.
It'll kill. It'll be less creepy.
That's an interesting thought. I mean,
it worked for Barkley.
Yeah. Barkley's knee deep in it now. So that's going on. We've got Picard getting handed the awesome responsibility of taking Patterson, Jay Gordon, and Marissa around the ship. They are children that won the Enterprise Science Fair.
This is a duty that the captain gets that our captain, the captain of the Entrepreneur, really does not relish.
Now, he's definitely reticent to spend the day with three of the hundreds and hundreds of children that live on the ship.
Is it just me, or do their science experiments kind of suck?
I planted radishes in the special dirt, and they came up all weird.
Like, how do you win a science fair by planting radishes into weird dirt?
The kid is like 7 years old, Adam.
That's not a project.
What was your science project in the science fair?
It was a pretty garbagey project, I'll give you that.
Exactly. Exactly.
My radishes turned out fine. They were not fucked up in a way that wins you ribbons.
But anyways, this is the kind of frivolous bullshit that's going on the Entrepreneur today.
Yeah.
And the captain gets on the elevator with the kids. There's like, I think Chief O'Brien and just like, you know, a few, like a handful of randos and Counselor Troy on the bridge. Everybody else is getting hammered in 10 forward, and the ship gets a banger dropped on it.
Really one of the significant bangers we've ever seen. because it just bangs and bangs and bangs. It's like an earthquake that lasts the full minute.
It's a you can tell a big banger when they cut to other parts of the ship and it's banging there too.
Yeah.
Like this is almost,
they do a tour of bangers.
Yeah, this is almost saucer section crashing in Star Trek Generations level banger. I mean, it's not quite that big a banger, but like that's the amount of cutting to other rooms we're talking about.
It's a banger so bad that people are killed.
Yeah.
It's pretty messed up.
Yeah. Keiko gets a bump on her noggin.
It is a glass table holocaust in 10 forward.
Yeah.
We haven't seen a lot of glass tables set designed on this show for like the last season. I feel like they saved them up for this one.
Yeah.
Like, don't set dress with the glass tables. We're saving it for episode 5.
They snuck them into the budget all through season 4 just so that they could have a big stockpile ready for this one.
Yeah.
The ship, when we come back from the title sequence, is in real bad shape. Like, the lights are out everywhere. On the bridge, they have no access to the turbo lifts. They have no comms with the rest of the ship. The people in 10 forward have been banged up so much that it's essentially a triage ward.
The exterior shot's shocking. It is... You're supposed to... You're used to seeing this neon ship.
Yeah.
Like, with really bright lights, and it's murdered out now.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing there. It's scary.
Yeah. Yeah, the ship has been lowered on its axles.
It has clearly illegal tint.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you suspect it has ground effects, but it's not moving, so they're not turned on.
Yeah, like an air suspension that is just not comfortable for driving around. It's all looks.
Yeah, yeah, this is form over function for sure. And
the sound of the license plate frame rattling is like the only idea that you have that it has a great big stereo system in it.
Right. Yeah, it's so bassy that it like it vibrates your sternum bone.
Yeah,
but you don't actually hear it.
Yeah.
So yeah, the officer that was on duty, Ensign No Name, on the bridge has been totally covered in lasagna, and the other ensign who is at ops, like instead of going and running to her, like gets up and runs to the turbo lift and tries to pry it open with his bare hands.
Chief O'Brien, the turbo lifts aren't working. We're trapped up here.
Has zero luck. That was a funny move, I thought. And Picard is in the elevator with three bawling children and is not equipped to comfort them or provide any solace that might be meaningful to them.
I want you all to stop crying. Everything is going to be all right.
These kids, on the one hand, they have a thankless job playing their roles, but at the same time, they are really rough. As child actors, I feel like they are not great. And I don't know what it is. Did they get loaded up with too much to do, or are they just not up to the level of being able to do what little they were given?
I don't know. They all sort of
feel
the like
littlest
they're in
kid
the...
is looking off screen all the time.
Yeah.
Like he's like spiking camera crew people in the back.
That kid in particular, but all three of them to varying degrees, sort of feel like they're in the Christmas pageant.
Yeah, they really are. And God, I feel like if you're casting them, a big part of the casting session is act like you're crying. Like, give me real emotion. And they are blowing it. Like, they sound like little baby pigs. They really sound bad. Yeah. I really wanted to turn off the episode at this point.
Picard
Their
is like...
Their squeals were so annoying.
Picard is like, your cries aren't even that realistic. You're gonna have to do something more convincing if you want my sympathy, Rudy.
Yeah, and in the maelstrom, Picard's fucked up. He's broken an ankle, and so he's down on the ground of the turbo lift.
How did he break an ankle in there?
There's a lot of off-camera action that happens surrounding Picard that they don't do anything to... Like, it's sort of confusing. It's on the viewer to headcanon the threads together.
Yeah.
There's the ankle breakage, but also, like, this isn't too much of a jump forward. He gets out of the turbo lift that he has already proven that he can't reach the top of.
Yeah.
And they don't show how he does that.
Yeah, those kids are not lifting the weight of that man.
Yeah, that's not just dead weight. That's old dead weight.
Yeah, that's like heavier than it looks, you know?
Is he wearing the action jacket in this scene?
I think he takes it off for the tour up the elevator shaft. So
you could argue action jacket's bad luck.
Oh, what about this? That jacket is made of suede, high tensillary strength. What if he like tossed one of the arms up to them, had them tie it off somewhere, and then he hauled himself up with his beefy arm strength?
Well, I feel like he's going to give that plan a lot of thought before doing it, because once you rub a rubbed spot into suede and start getting it dirty,
yeah,
that's just a real bear to clean.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. You know, go on YouTube. There's definitely some good suede cleaning tutorials on there. Especially challenging if it's shoes, but surprisingly, you can run them under running water as long as you're really careful about getting them super dry right after.
That's right. Stuff them with newspapers.
Got to stuff them with the newspaper. That's exactly right, Adam.
That's the one thing they don't have in a perfect future, Ben. Where's those papers? You can't stuff your suede shoes full of iPads and isolinear chips. That's not going to happen.
No. Speaking of shoes, there's a couple of parts of this episode where you get to see the bottoms of Picard's shoes.
Yeah.
I really liked that. I liked seeing that they're, like, worn out.
Yeah.
He doesn't have...
I like that, too.
He's not like a Chicago Bull where he gets new shoes every game. He's got...
Yeah, it was cool to see, like, the Clark's logo on the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, cool to see that he stepped in gum at some point and got it mostly off, but not all of it.
So comfy. Just a real nice walking around shoe.
That's a nicely broken in shoe, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna replicate a new pair. These are great.
Yeah.
Not long after this, Ensign Roe pops up on the bridge. She was in one of the turbo lifts and manages to pry the doors open. And it's our first time confronting the idea that Ensign Roe is not a one-off.
I'm alive. What the hell happened?
Welcome back. And she gets a fun entrance, too.
Fun entrance for Ensign Roe. And a fun scene. I mean, a fun episode, I think, too. Like, the way it breaks down on the bridge is the duty officer bought the farm in the collision, and they've worked out that it was a quantum filament, which is just a random thing in space that you can't detect, apparently. So just like it could happen at any time and for any reason. But the awkward truth of the matter is that Deanna Troi is the ranking officer on the deck and therefore is in command of the Enterprise while they are incommunicado with the rest of the ship. And Ensign Roe and Chief O'Brien immediately take up fairly antagonistic sides of her senior staff.
Roe is by far the more headstrong of the remaining bridge crew in terms of the course of action that she is recommending that they take. But I feel like O'Brien really performs admirably in this role. Like, I don't think he's a dick about it. He is just real professional with his advice and how he treats what is really both the viewer and everyone else is supposed to realize is an ill-equipped leader.
Right.
I believe Counselor Troi is the senior officer on the deck.
Counselor Troi?
She carries the rank of Lieutenant Commander.
I'd I'd appreciate some suggestions.
And I think that this is a really cool episode for Troy, because I kind of feel like the writing staff is like looking into the camera and admitting that they have really underwritten her so far.
Yeah.
And they're saying like, and this is the result of that, but we're going to try and do better from now on.
Yeah.
So like she is under-equipped, but it's this like really vulnerable performance where she seizes the, you know, she needs to be a leader and she rises to the occasion, but it's a journey.
Yeah. And like she begins that journey sort of feeling bad about her circumstances, and that like she is, because of the rule, the commanding officer in that moment, but she's sort of apologetic about it with everyone. Like she does not seize the crown in any way that establishes her dominance and that she is the leader for the rest of them. And it sort of allows Ro to fill that vacuum of leadership and really throw her weight around.
Yeah, she's sort of like a Kevin Smith character in that way.
I'm not even supposed to be here today!
Yeah.
My love is a fever, long until for that which longer nurseth the disease.
So this is a story that gets told in a couple of different settings, right? We've got the bridge crew, skeleton crew. We've got the 10 forward area,
which has like Riker and Data and Worf.
And Keiko,
right. And then you've got the Doctor and Geordi in the cargo bay.
Right.
And Picard and the three bawling children.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's sort of fun to have that story told in multiple different scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them has really big stakes.
Yeah.
It's not just like an A story and a B story and a distant C story. Like, people could die in every one of these scenes if things don't go exactly right.
Right. It's real Pulp Fiction-y in that way. There's no one storyline that is the most important in the film.
So let's go around the horn a little bit, Ben.
Let's do it.
In the shuttle bay is that Geordi and Beverly are in there trying to get the door open. And their fucking garage door clicker isn't working.
Yeah.
They're trying to get the door open. It's not happening. So they're fiddling around in the computer in the wall.
And the doctor takes a lean on the wall and she's like, ow!
Yeah. She puts the back of her hand against it to check for heat, as you're supposed to do, like in a house fire.
Yeah.
She's like, Geordi, this wall is really hot.
It's surprising that Geordi didn't pick that up on the visor, right?
I thought the same thing. Yeah, what does that visor see if not heat?
He can do metallurgy, but he can't do thermal stuff?
Yeah.
Weird. Well, anyways, he's got his arm like halfway down this hole when it explodes.
Holy shit!
And there's this creepy green flame coming out of this wall panel they had opened up.
That's a plasma fire.
It's putting out a lot of radiation.
But also, there's some barrels of some fissile material.
The poratum in those containers is used in emergency thruster packs. It's normally pretty stable stuff, but when you expose poratum to radiation, it has a way of exploding.
Now, when you're working in an industrial area, you're going to want an OSHA-approved fire extinguisher on hand at all times.
I recommend keeping all radio-sensitive materials in a lead-lined yellow barrel with nice bright red markings so that your coworkers on the job site can tell that that's a dangerous substance.
Now, when you put out a plasma fire, you want to sweep the fire extinguisher along the floor. Aim at the base of the fire at all times.
Make sure that your fire extinguisher has been recently inspected and serviced. If you don't know the inspection schedule, call your local fire marshal.
Yeah, and the deal with this plasma fire is that it's going to keep burning as long as there's air. And they've got all this radioactive material in the shuttle bay with them. They only have hours to live at this point. It's a real thing.
Not a great situation for them. So
they're
like, well, we don't have our mag liner in here, so we're just going to have to Hulk these barrels across the bay just to get them like a little bit further away from the fire. And that's like our opening move here, but we're at a loss.
Geordi's like, Bev, you're not pregnant anymore, right? You can move these heavy barrels with me? Good.
Hey, Doc, you shit out that kid?
So they start getting to work moving these barrels across the shuttle bay. Meanwhile, in 10 forward...
Access to the bridge has been completely severed by emergency bulkheads.
6 bay?
Heavy damage to section 23A has cut off access to 6 bay.
They're looking at splitting up the group there.
Reestablishing control of the ship should be our top priority.
Agreed. Can we get to engineering?
No, sir. The most direct route is blocked, but I believe we can use a starboard service crawlway.
Okay. You and I will try to get there, Mr. Worf. This room is about to fill up with wounded in a few minutes. They're going to need help. I want you to stay in charge here.
One of the consequences of this big banger is that communications is down and computers are crippled in such a way that they really don't know what other parts of the ship, what condition the other parts of the ship are in. So they're really sort of blind.
Yeah.
And they're sort of triaging the situation in their different areas. Like, well, if I'm closest to engineering, that's where I should go. And that's what the plan is from 10 forward. Even though, like... on the map, engineering is a real fucking hike from 10 forward.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why is it better for them to go there than the bridge? They're fucking 10 floors below the bridge. They're 9 floors below the bridge.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
So they're going to do the crawl through the Jefferies tubes to get to engineering. Picard is in the elevator and trying to get out the top. And... this is when he realizes that these kids are going to be dead weight until he can get them functioning again.
Yeah.
And so he comes up with actually like a pretty clever scheme for managing them, which is he gives them field commissions. So the girl who's like the oldest of the three is... given a couple of pips and declared to be his number one. Jay Gordon is the science officer, and little Patterson is the botanist or something.
He's like the chief of radishes.
Yeah.
Cat. Which in a weird way outranks O'Brien, like at all times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of what Keiko's actual job is too, so...
Yeah, the captain pips them out.
Yeah, if you like it, then you should have put a pip on it.
Yeah, so what Picard's able to do is marshal their effort and sort of beat back the crying.
Yeah.
But neither of those things is able to get him on the roof of the turbo lift, which he magically does.
Yeah.
That's a scene we don't see.
We don't see that. There was also the part where he had them like hauling the cables out of the thing. Maybe he made a rope out of that.
Is that what he did? I was paying attention.
Didn't they like dig the cables out of the box?
They did. But they did, but we don't see how the cables were used.
I don't.
You're gonna like throw a lasso to the roof of the turbo lift?
Adam, who cares? It's just a detail, man. It's about the relationships.
I'm a stickler for continuity.
Well, if you're a stickler for continuity, you would have been complaining about the fact that Marissa had the pips on her collar. And then he decides to make her number one and gives her some pips for her collar.
Right. Yeah. Not great.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
And 10 forward, Keiko is about to have that baby.
Yeah, I guess all the jostling really, really shook things loose down there. I mean, I don't know how babies work, so I'm just assuming that with all the glass table shattering and the falling on the ground and the head strike that happens, baby's coming.
The baby is like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, it's really like about self-preservation for the baby. This might be the baby's only way to escape the relationship with Miles and Keiko.
Yeah.
If it can just sort of sneak out during a disaster.
I love that. So, like, Worf has sort of been given the job of medical officer in 10 Forward.
I love the doula.
I love his bedside manner.
I'm going into labor.
You cannot. This is not a good time, Keiko.
I would love to just, like, have this series, but with Beverly and Worf's roles reversed. Just to see an entire series of Worf's, you know, like, you have stage 4 breast cancer. Abandon hope.
Dr. Worf, medicine man.
If you didn't want to choke, you shouldn't have aspirated on your food. Shameful.
Yeah. It's great to just sort of retcon all of the Six Bay scenes that we've seen with Beverly and just sort of mentally replace her with Worf.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Only a coward bleeds when they cut theirself on paper.
Can you imagine O'Brien goes in there with a separated shoulder from kayaking? Worf just turns him away.
Yeah. Not today, curly-haired man.
Kayaking is not a warrior's sport.
So the Keiko labor scene is commencing. Up on the bridge, Ro and O'Brien are real loggerheads because they've discovered that the containment field around the antimatter pods is declining quickly. And if it gets below 15% of normal field strength, it's that means the field is going to collapse and the ship will explode.
Troy is playing a very important role in this scene and every other scene, which is the viewer's proxy.
Right.
Like, they have to explain all of this shit to her because she doesn't get the danger. Like, they're talking techno-speak back and forth, and Troy's like, well, what does that mean? And then they have to explain it to her, which is basically a turn to camera for us.
Yeah.
The field strength is at 40%, and it is still falling.
If it falls to 15%, the field will collapse, and we'll have a containment breach.
Which means?
Which means the ship will explode.
The position Ro has taken is like, we don't have any evidence that anybody in the star drive section is alive, so let's get the saucer out of here, like under impulse, and potentially save hundreds of crew people from that thing blowing up. And O'Brien is like, well, wait, we don't know if there are people alive in the star drive. Let's try and give them a shot at repairing this situation so that we can try to save everybody. And that's actually like a pretty legitimate conflict, I think. Like, the two sides of that argument are both really legitimate given the information they have, and they both feel really strongly that they've taken the right position.
Yeah. Yeah, you can definitely make the case for both sides, and they do. And so Troy's stuck in the middle.
Yeah. This scene sort of made me wonder if O'Brien has a better relationship with Ro than he does with Keiko, though. Because for all of their disagreement, they stay like pretty respectful of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, like, it occasionally devolves into a little bit of ad hominem, but for the most part, they're prepared for the other person to present some information that will change their mind, you know?
Ro is fairly openly contemptuous of Troy.
Yeah, because I think her thing is like, you know, this is something I actually work on.
Yeah.
And because of some technicality with how Starfleet issues ranks to counselors.
Yeah.
You're the commanding officer and you're not actually trained for this.
Yeah, like, hey, Deanna, why don't you counsel the turbolift doors open? Oh, wait, that's not working, is it?
Well, in the cargo bay, Geordi and the doctor have come up with a plan for putting this fire out, and it's a two birds with one stone type of plan. What they're going to do is hit a button that blows the hatch and lets all the air out of the bay, also blowing all of the barrels out and also blowing the fire out. The downside of this is that they're going to be in there because they don't have any way to get out either. And they're going to have to, the two panels, the one that opens the door and the other one that pressurizes the room, are on opposite sides of the bay from each other. So this is a risky maneuver.
Now, when you're designing a galaxy-class starship, you're going to want to put the panel that pressurizes the shuttle bay across the shuttle bay from the panel that opens the shuttle bay door.
Much like when you're installing a sink disposal, you want the switch to be far enough away that a normal human adult can't have the hand in the drain when the grinder is running.
Yeah, it's a real wedding ring in the garbage disposal situation for Geordi and Beverly right now in that shuttle bay. And they're sort of teasing a End of Aliens moment here, which is an exciting amount of tension building.
Sure is. And I was like, oh man, I am ready to see this doctor get blown horizontal one more time.
I know. It's sort of her move.
It is.
It's more of a move than her tap dancing.
Yeah. The kids and the captain are debating how to escape the elevator, and the kids refuse the captain's order to get out of there without him. And this is, unfortunately, Adam, I think, our episode of Crimson Tide in space, because it devolves into Captain Picard climbing up a ladder with three children singing a round of Frère Jacques.
What we need is a climbing song. Frère Jacques, Frère Jacques, dormez-vous, dormez-vous, sonnez la matine, sonnez la matine, ding, ding, dong, ding, ding, dong.
Very good. Now, keep singing.
It's a pretty unfortunate scene, Ben.
Yeah, that sound, the acoustics of the turbolift shaft are great for that song, though.
Yeah, I mean, the epic scene of watching a turbolift crash to the bottom of the shaft is enough to force them into song. And that's the song they choose to sing.
Yeah.
It's a pretty metal moment that they totally, they totally kneecap. Yeah.
Fair enough. And then Keiko pushes out that baby, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that baby comes out with the help of Doula Worf, Doula Edition Worf, which is an action figure version of him I don't think we have the option of buying.
Yeah, he's got like cowrie shells woven into his hair and like some amber beads on a necklace.
I feel like our buddy B. Tills could put together a hacked version of a Worf action figure and like put together Doula Worf.
Yeah.
He's pretty crafty like that.
Yeah, he's got the skills to put something like that together.
B. Tilly, of course, the friend of ours who does our great Star Trek cards on Twitter.
Have you been getting a load of the Riker Collection VHS box art that's been going up on Twitter?
I have.
Oh my
God. I've been getting a big load of that.
Yeah, that's at Ann Kilzer on Twitter is doing those. And man, I mean, I think she's kind of giving Bill Tilly a run for his money. No pressure or anything. I think the more the merrier.
From our lips to the crafter's hands, like I remember mentioning how much fun it would be to have the Riker Collection exist.
Yeah.
In that pink neon script, and here it is.
It is perfect.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So fucking good.
She does the thing that Bill Tilly does so well, which is she finds the screenshot that perfectly says what you're trying to say.
Yeah, exactly.
It's real fun.
And is fully adding to the comedy. You know, it's
not retelling the joke. It's telling it better.
Yeah, she's telling it better for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Worf rises to the occasion.
Worf just stands there with a catcher's mitt, like just waiting.
Yeah.
You're not gonna want to eat a sandwich off at that table in 10 forward after Keiko's given birth on it. That's for sure.
Yeah. That might have to be exclusively for playing Stratagema from now on.
You shoot that one out of the torpedo tube, I think, and just let it float free.
Of all the souls I've encountered in my time in Starfleet, this table had the most human endometrium on it.
This table had the most juices.
The most placenta.
Boy, I bet Worf's down to eat that placenta.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah,
come on. That's a warrior's meal right there.
Chop it up over some gach.
Oh, yeah, you're not making tea out of it. You're just eating it raw.
Yeah.
Delicious.
And it turns out it's a baby girl, not a baby boy like Keiko is predicting.
Mm.
Geordi and the doctor blow all the air into space. The doctor manages to make it to the panel, repressurize the bay.
And that leaves Data and Riker.
Yeah.
Who have traversed, I think they said, 50 meters of Jeffrey's tubes, which the math on that doesn't really compute either.
Yeah, what the hell?
On their way to engineering.
Did you like that scene where Data actually got to try suicide on for size?
In one of the great Data suicide callbacks, they come across a barrier that seems pretty insurmountable. It's basically a wall of lightning.
It's the most Data, insane barrier yeah. of all time.
Data and Riker look at this thing and they're like, well, how are we going to get past this thing? And what they need is like a broom, a wooden broom that isn't going to conduct any electricity. And Data's like, well, I'm one of those.
Much of my body framework is made up of tripolymers, a non-conductive material.
And as if that wasn't macabre enough, he talks Riker into dismounting his head and taking it with him for the rest of the journey. So when they show up in engineering, what's happened is the bridge crew have shunted some of the emergency power that they managed to get down to the panel in engineering that shows that there's a problem with antimatter containment, and Riker is able to like hotwire Data's head into the computer system with literally moments to spare before the containment collapses, and they save the ship just in the nick of time. And Ro has to admit to O'Brien that she had it all wrong.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Then we get the sweetest, sugariest button on an episode maybe ever, don't we?
Yeah, well, everything is all good. The ship is heading back to Starbase for repairs. Troy saunters onto the bridge with the three kids, and she zings the hell out of Riker. Like, he's like, hey, how did command suit you? You like that big chair or what? And she's like,
I don't think I'm cut out to be captain. First officer, maybe. I understand there aren't many qualifications.
Slide whistle.
Yeah, and then the kids give a plaque commemorating their experience to Captain Picard, and he thanks them, and as he's walking off, he tells Number One, you've got the bridge, and both Marissa and Riker say, aye, aye, Captain, and it's a slide whistle, for sure. But Adam,
they sort of Dukes of Hazzard this ending, you
yeah.
know?
But I feel like the slide whistles of yore were sort of hapless.
Yeah.
And this one felt really earned.
This was intentionally hapless.
Yeah. It was cute.
Yeah, it was real cute. I don't know how I feel about it, though. It was like, basically everyone in the scene was antiqued with powdered sugar. It was so sweet. Real sweet. Like, winking? Picard winks? Picard hates kids.
I think he's come around.
I don't know. I would have been good with it if not for the wink. Like, the wink was too much.
Okay.
And where's he going to put that plaque?
I know. I like,
there better be some plaque continuity, Ben.
There's all these little props that Picard has collected over the course of his time as captain, like the Mintaken bandage thing and the knife that the slickback kid stabbed him with.
Yeah.
I feel like this is not going to be quite as lovingly preserved as some of those other things.
What's the name of the girl, the older girl?
Marissa.
Marissa does that thing that you just can't do. Like, one of the rules of presentations is that you don't read the slide when you're doing a presentation.
Yeah.
And when they present the plaque to Picard, she basically says exactly what's on it.
Yeah.
You gotta do better than that, Marissa.
Yeah.
Seriously. Real garbage presentation, if you ask me.
One thing that I found really heartening about this plaque was for Halloween this year, I went as Wesley Crusher, the boy.
The boy?
And I made my own communicator badge because I forgot that he didn't have a communicator badge in the uniform that I was wearing.
Yeah.
And I just made it out of cardboard by kind of tracing the two shapes and cutting them out and gluing them on top of each other. And it came out looking really bad, but it's a dead ringer for the Starfleet badge that the kids drew on this plaque. So
yeah,
I don't feel that bad after all.
You demonstrated like a 9-year-old's crafting ability.
Yeah,
is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm Jay Gordon level crafting.
Congratulations.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
I did enjoy the episode, but it is very flawed. It is profoundly flawed. The continuity is totally fucked up. How come Geordi and Bev can open the door into space, but they can't open the door into the corridor? Like, their clicker works for one of the shuttle bay doors, but not the other. I didn't get that. There's the whole continuity with Picard getting out of the turbo lift shaft. And then there's Data guessing correctly that he would not be killed by the lightning. It really asks you to take a number of leaps here.
Yeah. But I think that it's sort of an episode that confirms the theory that you were advancing recently, that Star Trek is a place.
Yeah.
And this is like a series of little stories that happen in that place. It's not some big existential crisis or some time-space rift that they have to puzzle their way through. It's just like, you know, this bad thing happened and these characters that we now know have to kind of cope. And I like that it's just kind of a bunch of little vignettes about them. And, you know, it largely is a very loving series of vignettes. You know, it gives more for them each to do than they often get.
I completely agree. It really, it shows the potential that the show has when they decide to share the ball a little bit among different groupings of crew members.
Yeah.
And they choose to tell the story in terms of place instead of plot. Like, they did a great job here. They also did not take the bait of cartooning up Troy's inability to command. Like, they could have really fucked up her character and made fun of her and have been cruel about it. But they weren't. Like, she was unprepared and she knew it, but she still led.
Yeah.
She was not the right choice to lead, but she did because that was her rank and she did a good job.
Yeah. She's the hero we have right now.
Yeah, totally. So, like, this episode cashed in on a lot of good potential here. So I liked it.
Yeah. Adam, we have a light blinking here, and occasionally that means we have Priority One messages to check in on. Shall we take a look?
Let's do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Hey team, Adam is literally traveling in the Far East, so he's not here to do Jumbotrons with me at time of editing this episode, so I'm going to do them myself. Our first Priority One message here is a commercial message, and here it is. Are you a nerd? You must be if you're listening to this show and hearing this message, so subscribe to the greatest nerd history podcast from the Alpha Quadrant. The Internet History Podcast. Histories of everything from the Netscape browser to the iPhone, and oral histories and in-depth interviews with the people that made it happen. Everyone from the inventor of the MP3 to the guy that first tried online dating. Subscribe to the Internet History Podcast at wherever podcasts happen for you.
That sounds like an excellent show, although I wouldn't look to it if you want a history of the Hoosnack. I did away not only with all Hoosnack everywhere, but also with the history of the Hoosnack. I'm the only person you're ever going to hear about Hoosnack from. And maybe that will make you question whether the Hoosnack are even a thing. Or maybe it's just a yarn that I spin to make everybody fear me. Well, I'll let you scratch your head about that, but you should go subscribe to this podcast right now.
Thanks so much to the Internet History Podcast for that message. That sounds like a great show. I will definitely be subscribing. We have one personal message here. It is from Andrea, and it is to Gabe. Here's that one. Happy birthday to my number one. Thank you for being an amazing guy who's smarter than Jean-Luc and sexier than Riker. Have a great 36th year of life, Gabe. And then Andrea goes on to ask Adam and I to do something that will make this extra fun for Gabe. So I'm going to assume that that is probably something to do with Picosby. So
it's your 36th birthday, Rudy. I hope you have a delicious cake that doesn't have any pudding anywhere near it. I won't be able to attend your party because I'm a fictional character, and that's better for everyone. Theo!
So, those are... Those are our priority one messages. Sorry Adam wasn't here for that, but he will be back soon. And if you would like to leave a priority one message, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. Big part of how we fund the existence of this show, and they are much appreciated. Thanks.
Darmok Angela.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
Boy, I did. There is that big banger sequence at the beginning of the episode, and...
It's just begging to be turned into a sliding into your DMs-like gif?
Yeah, exactly. And there's a... couple of no names in the background of 10 Forward playing three-dimensional space chess.
Uh-huh.
As the banger is like in between the first and second banger, there's a guy that's just frantically trying to put all the chess pieces back where they were. Just really made me laugh because like the ship is shaking around like crazy and he's like, fuck my game of chess.
He really has a lot on the line there.
Yeah.
That poor guy.
Yeah.
He's probably dead now.
Felt like a real drunk Shimoda thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
My drunk Shimoda goes to Riker. In the scene where they're in the Jeffries tube crawling along and they're confronted with the lightning barrier,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we sort of made light of how fast the decision is made that Data would jump into it. Like a man jumping into a subway car who doesn't like his job. Like they have a legit huddle up where they have sort of the conversation like, are you sure this is going to work? Yeah, I think so. And one of the things that Riker says is, are you suggesting we use your body as a means to disrupt the lightning? And that to me is like, that's just perfect Riker, because he just gets consent even for non-sex stuff. Like, he's being super clear on yes meaning yes.
Yeah.
About this crazy plan. So I'm definitely giving my Shimoda to Riker for that.
Right on, Riker.
The master of consent.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
What do we have coming up in the next episode?
The next episode is Season 5, Episode 6, The Game. The fate of the Federation is in Wesley Crusher, the boy's, hands when he returns to find the crew of the Entrepreneur addicted to a dangerous new game. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
This is our Robin Leffler-centric episode.
Yeah.
The Get Foxy a load of Leffler. Yeah. This is one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah,
I love
fun.
This episode. This is... Some people hate this episode like they hate Darmok. And I understand how people could hate Darmok. You either love that episode or you don't, but I don't understand the hate for the game. The game's fun. It's one of those place episodes, isn't it, right?
Don't hate the game. Hate the players.
It's not a specific Star Trek story. It's a thing that happens in a Star Trek world. Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah. It does
They're
have a little bit
space
of an after-school special vibe to it, and... It's pretty hilarious that they have to bring Wesley back for that reason.
It's too bad that part of the episode isn't Wesley recalling Tasha's admonishment about how bad drugs are.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
That would have been good. Well, would you veto this one? Or it sounds
Hell
like
no.
you kind of like it.
No, I love this episode, and I would defend it with a counter veto if you tried any funny business, so... I definitely want to see it. I think we'll have a fun time with it.
Yeah, I want to save my vetoes for something really bad this season. So I also will not veto. So that's the next episode. If you like this episode or any other episode and want to help us get the word out about the show, go to iTunes and leave us a nice review. If you'd like to talk to us on Twitter, use the hashtag GreatestGen. There's a lively community. Bill Tilly's up there putting up baseball cards. Ann Kilzer is up there doing Riker Collection VHSs. There's so much fun content going on there. And that is nothing to diminish the great stuff that happens in the Facebook group and on the Reddit. A real sweet community of people have just grown up around this show, and we feel so lucky every single time we get to interact with that community.
If you like the music we play on the show, our title and interstitial music's done by the one Dark Materia, and with other supporting music done by our friend Adam Ragusea.
Yeah, the great Adam Ragusea. And I think that just about wraps it up, Adam.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and an episode of The Greatest Generation that is super addictive, despite the fact that it doesn't look like it would actually be that fun.
Yeah, what's up with that?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.